if you can't kind of go to the uncomfortable edge of something, you're not going to really bring change. And of course, we don't want it to be so uncomfortable that it's unsafe. So learning how to be with someone and have them have one foot planted firmly in the present in their adult self, and be able to go back and perhaps work with a childhood memory where there's trauma and help them facilitate that process of doing that is really important.
Here we go. Hello and welcome to the Focusing Way podcast. I'm your host, Davide Battistella. Find the Focusing Way on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and our website, thefocusingway.com. Today on the Focusing Way podcast, founder and executive director of the Seattle Focusing Institute, Jeffrey Morrison. A focusing-oriented psychotherapist and focusing coordinator, Jeffrey Morrison practices on Vashon Island in Washington State and via Zoom. He specializes in working with complex trauma and teaching focusing-oriented therapy to therapists and other healing professionals. His training program blends focusing, mythology, mindfulness, and other embodied practices for unwinding trauma and restoring wholeness. His new organization, the Seattle Focusing Institute, is dedicated to teaching focusing, meditation, trauma release exercises, movement practices, and more. These practices for change are designed to transform our stuck patterns of living. And joining me now is Jeffrey Morrison. Jeffrey, welcome to the Focusing Way podcast.
Thank you very much, David, for having me.
Yeah, I'm very excited about our conversation today. And just to begin, I wanted to ask you about some of what you've experienced and what you've seen as a therapist when you began to add focusing to your work with patients and clients.
That's a great question. I was, for about 15 years, I worked in middle schools, working with kids, doing counseling, and I knew about focusing, and I think I used it a little bit on my own, but it wasn't really until I started a private practice around the year 2000 that I started kind of getting back into studying focusing and having focusing partnerships. And as I did that, my life began to change in different ways, and I really began to understand how to connect with people and listen to people more deeply and really track their process more than kind of the content of what they were saying. And that really allows a therapist to, I think, join with the client more and really help them touch into their own experiencing more, which is really what brings lasting and deep change. Otherwise, you're doing more kind of problem solving, which can be helpful at times, but doesn't really get at the deeper, longer term issues.
Did you find that bringing focusing into the practice, like what kind of, was it immediate, the shifts you started to see? Or as you became a better listener, what did that do for you as a therapist?
Yeah, I think it's gradual. I think it's both as the therapist changes, that has an influence on who I work with and the way I work with people, that I'm better able to both listen to them and myself at the same time, and the interaction between us. And that's something that develops. And I think, you know, it's still developing. It takes years to really master one's craft. And I would say over time, I got better at really being able to find ways to bring focusing in uniquely with each client. So it wasn't something where I would say, well, David, now we're going to do focusing and I'm going to show you focusing and focusing is going to change your life. I would I would just listen for a little spot, a little doorway, and offer an invitation that might help you kind of pause and settle into something you're talking about. And as you connect more deeply with that, you begin to realize like, oh, there's a way of really unwinding and listening to yourself that brings change. And you can feel that in your body. And the more you have experiences like that, the more you trust that, the more you recognize the value and are kind of willing to go there. So especially when I work with therapists that are just learning focusing, of course they want to say, well, how do I bring this into therapy? And how do I do this? And how do I work with that person? And the answer is always, well, it depends. Like, how do you particularly bring it into working with that particular client? And so I do have sort of, I've learned many stories or created many different narratives, but it has to uniquely fit with the person I'm sitting with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess what I'm really curious about is how much it focusing impacts the therapy. Like, you as a therapist before focusing and after, what kinds of things begin to open up, not just for yourself, but also what kind of things do you see in your patient or clients?
So I think it was really helpful to have more training after I was first certified in working with trauma. And because trauma is kind of a whole, it's kind of, working with trauma is kind of like going off-road. There aren't many sort of clear pathways and markers, and you really have to build a trusting relationship with the client and know how to kind of dip in and out of trauma spots. So that took some time. And once I really kind of had a bigger sense of what was possible and what I could do and the risks I could take safely with clients, that's when I really noticed much bigger sort of shifts and changes in the process of working with others. And all of my focusing teachers have been wonderful. My trauma teaching came from Shirley Turcotte, who is up in Vancouver, British Columbia. And she taught from her own experience, and she had a big trauma experience, and she had lots of experience working with trauma. And it just kind of gave me a much bigger horizon of which to understand the process. And because not only is it the focusing is so important and helping people be with their uncomfortable experiences and turn toward and befriend their experiences so you can work with that, but you also have to have a sense of the territory, because people need some sort of guidance and support, encouragement, safety, to know that you really know what the territory is, where they are in the territory, so that they will do the deeper work. So I think both of those things go hand in hand.
Yeah. And you're not just a therapist and focusing practitioner now. You're also training therapists now and teaching them how to add focusing to their practices. So maybe talk about that evolution and how, where that's going now with the Seattle Focusing Institute.
Well, I've been training and teaching for, about 12, 14 years. But recently I've created a new business called the Seattle Focusing Institute. And so it's dedicated to all things focusing and teaching and bringing in practices for change and really helping mentor other practitioners so that they can participate in the program so they can teach their own things. And, you know, one of the themes that I bring into my work is really helping the practitioner. It's really about the development of the therapist or healing practitioner as a person when they're doing their own healing, that they are changed and they bring that into their work with others. And part of that is recognizing that we all have our own story. There's something trying to live through each of us that is unique. And that's what I encourage people to find and work with. Jean Genlin said, you know, we don't need someone to do what someone else has already done. We need you to bring in your own unique twist on things and contribute that to the world. So I work with each practitioner and learner to kind of connect with their own story. And one of the ways I do that is looking at kind of what can get in the way of the story and or initiate something that will help them find that and change. And so we look, especially working with trauma, I look at wounds and gifts that we all are wounded in some way in life. And some of those are more, you know, we might say bigger wounds or traumas, but we all can connect to something in our life that both kind of gets in the way of our story, but also if we look at it, may really help us to understand the story that's trying to live through us. Mm. And when practitioners learn that, I think they bring a whole new level of connection, care, healing, being able to work relationally, being able to work somatically, because so much of this work really requires first safety and then asking people to be with uncomfortable experiences in a safe way. Because if you can't be with it, if you can't kind of go to the uncomfortable edge of something, you're not going to really bring change. Mm. And of course, we don't want it to be so uncomfortable that it's unsafe. So learning how to be with someone and have them have one foot planted firmly in the present in their adult self and be able to go back and perhaps work with a childhood memory where there's trauma, and help them facilitate that process of doing that is really important.
Yeah. Yeah, and you mentioned those two beautiful words, wounds and gifts, and how a lot of your work, you work around those things. Can you talk about it in terms of wounds as gifts?
Sure. There's a few things I can say there. One is a wound. Wounds and gifts, I think, come together. They're kind of interwoven. And from focusing and the philosophy that underpins focusing, there's a sense that what we feel as the uncomfortable feelings that we want to change, the problem, is the body's way of saying, hey, something isn't right. But it's also the body saying, I have a sense that of what would be right, of what would bring change. And so right there, both the problem that keeps us stuck and the way forward kind of come together. So for me, I wrote an article for the Focusing publication, The Folio, some years ago. And it was after my trauma training with Shirley Turcotte. And I thought, well, Shirley teaches so much of what she does is through her own story. And she's got this big story. And you know, what's my story? And I guess I could just, you know, talk about neuroscience and interpersonal neurobiology and all these other things about trauma work. But what is the story of my woundedness? Is there a story there? And I began to really look at my struggles in education and being dyslexic, which I didn't really know until about the time that I was writing this article, because it was perhaps just a little before that that my daughter was diagnosed with dyslexia. And I started reading a book about dyslexia, and I thought, oh my God, this explains what's been going on for me.
Yeah.
And so although I realized I was a smart kid growing up and I did okay, school was just really hard at times, especially things like spelling and writing. And I just felt quite inadequate at times. My French teacher in high school told me to come back when I learned English. And my mother sent me to college saying, date women who can spell. And, you know,
I'm relating. And
actually, when I was,
when
I was looking for schools before I went to college, I was interviewing with an admissions director of a small liberal arts college. And he leaned forward at some point and he said, now, I just want you to know that your SAT scores don't mean that you're mentally retarded.
Oh my gosh.
Which I knew, but, you know, I struggled. Mm-hmm. So I also realized that if I wanted to do what I wanted with focusing in terms of teaching, I had to write and get my writing out there, and I had to be in front of people and speak and do these kinds of things that were really kind of difficult for me. So in writing that paper, it helped me realize that, oh, you know, this really did alter my life. It changed how I thought about myself and how I felt about myself and what I felt I was capable of. And as I worked with that in a focusing kind of way, I got much more comfortable with those things. I got much more comfortable with younger aspects of myself that wanted to turn away from being in front of people or teaching, or got very dysregulated when I tried to take a bigger step forward. And that was helpful not only to me personally, but then in terms of developing a training program and working with others and encouraging them to find their own wound. And when we're wounded, it can initiate us into something that we didn't know, because we have to, you know, if the wound doesn't kill you, then you continue forward, but you continue forward in an altered way. And you may find things that really help you discover something important about yourself. And, you know, one of the things that I discovered was just my stick-to-itiveness, my ability to really persevere with a difficult task where I know it would take me much longer than someone else maybe to write something or do something, but I could really persist with it.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it's a strength or something that we use to get through the difficulty that is the gift. And sometimes it awakens us to something deeper. And so another thing I learned along the way was just, I have a real ability to sit with people in their darkest hours, that I can really persist in a similar kind of way in darkness with someone. And because I've done a lot of that myself, and I'm pretty good at kind of just being there. And there's another interesting thing about wounds and gifts, which is, or the other doorway into your really understanding your own unique story, which is things that we find great joy in and are inspired to do, and we just naturally are drawn to. Those things, I mean, that door feels very easy to go to and through at first, you know, follow your bliss. But when we actually do that and it calls on us to be bigger and more spacious and hold a bigger space to really embody and hold that bigger thing that life calls us to do, that can scare the shit out of us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's when we say, well, you know, that's a really interesting thing, but maybe not today, or, you know, I'll get to that later, or it would be nice to do, but I can't because of these reasons. And it brings up some of the same dysregulating sort of qualities in our body and experiencing, like trauma does. And to be able to work with those so that we can be our biggest self is really important. So I think gifts can come out of both of those kinds of experiences.
I came across this really lovely couple of sentences on your website, Seattle Focusing. And I'll just read them back to you. Trauma is not something to overcome. It's something that initiates us to a deeper experience of self and connection to others. Focusing offers us therapeutic and contemplative practice for both self-healing and working with others.
I like that.
Can you talk about that? I like it too. Yeah.
I mean, one way of looking at trauma is something that shouldn't have happened, did, and it can cause big problems in someone's life. And I think in the mental health field, there's a lot of attention to the symptoms and helping people alleviate symptoms, which has benefits. But I think there's a much deeper understanding and change process where if we look at the effects of trauma, I mean, there's what happens, but it's really how that affects the individual and how they carry that trauma, how they begin to believe what they're capable of or not capable of, that they feel perhaps broken, fragmented. And so that can be a crisis. Mm-hmm. And it also can be an opportunity to really peel back different layers of experience and understanding and an initiation into a much deeper sense of who they are as a person. And that's where I think, you know, helping them look at what got them through the trauma, helping them see that they do have resources, that they do have gifts, that they do have things that bring them joy is really important. So it's kind of that shift from post-traumatic stress disorder to post-traumatic growth. Mm. And it's really more of a growth and eventually a wellness model, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really beautiful way of looking at it, and a wellness model. I really like that idea and that approach. Those words are actually, just as I take them in, it makes me want to build wellness models everywhere, because it seems like there's so much dysfunction in some of the systems we've set up. Yeah. So what I wanted to just get into now is, because you're teaching focusing, you know, so why do you feel it's important to teach professional therapists how to integrate focusing into their practices?
So I think when a client comes into the office, you know, someone that maybe isn't, you know, real savvy with therapy, and they're able to say, you know, this is, you know, I'm suffering in this way, and, you know, this is what I know about the problem, and this is what I feel about the problem, and it's your job, therapist, to make it go away. And, you know, my refrain is, you know, actually, what you want to get rid of is really a doorway into your experience. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you can tell me some things about your your issue and how you feel about it, but those kind of go round and round and don't get you someplace different. And so, you know, Jen Lynn kind of talked about this at the beginning of his FOT book, Focusing Oriented Therapy, and the experiential process, that those are common dead ends in therapy when we just talk about the story and we talk about the feelings that the story has, because those are fairly clear and distinct. How do we help people be with themselves in a way where something new comes? And there's a lot of research and a lot of talk and a lot of teaching going on out there about somatic approaches, somatic experiencing. Peter Levine, who learned some of what he does from Eugene Genlin. There's other methodologies that I think have been influenced by Genlin's work, because it's an experiencing process. And this is what Genlin discovered in the research, was that people that got better in a year of psychotherapy could be found in the first few sessions of their year of therapy. And it was really how they were already sort of talking about their problem or being with their problem. They would become kind of less articulate and kind of struggled to find the right words to describe something. They would actually take the time to do that. And that's where something new begins to come. And if we can't help people pay attention to their whole being, their whole body, and work with what the body knows or the body's wisdom, then we're missing a whole lot of what's going on. And sometimes that comes just through talking about something that we will very naturally kind of maybe pause and notice that there's something more there. But if we can actually help people find those spots and then kind of enter those doors and be with that experience more deeply for even a short period of time, a lot more comes and changes. It also helps, I think, a lot with working sort of through a person's whole history. I call it sort of time traveling, that if you can enter the somatic experience of something in the present, you can often use that to trace back, well, you know, when did that begin in your life? How far back does that go? And in people that are unfamiliar with focusing will readily say, well, that goes back as long as I can remember, or that goes back to when I was, you know, just a little kid. Or some people say, well, you know, that feels like it was true at birth or before birth. And you begin to see some of the ways of working with vicarious trauma as well as regression, and work with different age spots with a person. And I think that that's just so incredibly helpful for therapists to know how to do that safely, because if you don't really know how to do it very well, you can very easily find some memory piece that is overwhelming and re-traumatizing to the person. Mm-hmm. And I've certainly had clients say, you know, I was in therapy with someone else and then this happened and I never went back, or this happened, we talked about it and the therapist didn't know what to do about it. Mm. Or they just kind of ignored my experience because they probably didn't want to go there. And to be able to open those very tender places up and work with them so that a person can see that there's a whole lot more there and really meet their own experience, then they are in a much better position to move on.
Yeah.
I recently had a client say something that it was so simple, and I hadn't actually just thought about it this way, but she said, people will tell me, you know, to just let it go. It's something that happened in the past. Just move on. And she said, you can't let something go until you've actually met it. And met it the way it is, not how you would like it to be. And what she was referring to in her own life is really meeting and fully accepting really how bad it was as a kid when she was a child, what happened to her. And once she could really meet that experience and be with it and work with it in very, you know, many different little memories along the way and focusing therapy sessions, then she could let it go.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just the discussion of inner wisdom. And we hear a lot about accessing that part deep within us through focusing. And you, it's really focusing is something you have to do and travel into. It's a very personal experience. And it's a, you know, it's especially beautiful when there's a partnership where someone can hold space. And, you know, that in your case is what you're doing as a therapist. But can you just talk about, you've talked about it so eloquently already, but can you talk about it a little bit more about this idea of being able to go deeper in your own focusing experience and in your practice and what kind of results that's produced?
I first encountered focusing back in 1983, and it really kind of blew me away. I was recently out of college, and just the inner experiencing process really, I knew, spoke to me deeply, and it led to coming out to Seattle in 1984 and going to Seattle U. Seattle University's psychology program. But as I mentioned, it wasn't till a bit later that I really started studying focusing. And that's when I met Ann Weiser Cornell. And I really liked that she had this whole program, because up until then, my experience with focusing was you would just take, you know, someone would teach focusing the six steps. And once you learn the six steps, that was focusing. Or maybe some application. And also what started happening in these workshops was they would give you these guides on what to do when the process didn't work. And those guides kept getting bigger and bigger. And Anne has such a lovely way of teaching focusing. And she has such lovely use of language. I mean, in one sense, focusing is our direct experience. And it has no steps. It has no language. But to help us get there and be there and stay there and work with our experience, you build steps and you build language and invitations. And she has developed lovely language to help us be with something. And the sense of presence and how to find presence and the difference between being present and being identified with something, stuck in the problem, and how we need a little space from the problem. Her language just really helped me be able to do that and to work with parts, because everything in our experience is a something. Jean Genlin would say, you are an I with no content, meaning all my content, all my different worries, my different mood states, my different parts, they're not who I am. They're something that I have, but really who I am is something more than all that. And so part of it is helping someone learn to be with their stuff. And the more I learn to be with my stuff and notice how the different aspects of me contributed to the conversation, so to speak, then I could sort of tease those out and realize kind of what was even deeper inside of me. And really what's there, I think, when we have that open connection to ourselves is the doorway to an open connection with everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the doorway into the more contemplative, spiritual, mystical, however you want to try to language that one.
Yeah.
So that was such important training for me in really having a good solid base to my focusing and focusing experience. And that's pretty much what the first year of my training program does, is really work to give people a very solid base with focusing. Because there's a way one can do focusing and sort of touch into the present experience without really knowing how to go deeper and unwind more touchy, vulnerable, wounded places in us.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can really notice how we can be with our experience, I'll say, like, pull up a chair and just listen to that.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to that little girl and how she had to go through that. And to help it be very relational for the client with their own experience, and for me with the client with their experience, that language helps immensely.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. And Anne's background as a linguist brought a kind of a framework, and the language that allows for deeper listening, and also just the being so tuned into just the right word and just the right thing at the right moment. And her work with Barbara developing that over the years is really, really gorgeous. And I have another little quote I found from your website that I'd like to read,
right.
which is this: when you say to yourself, "I've got a bad feeling about this," you're making both a statement about what you know about the situation cognitively and how you sense the more of it as a bodily whole. You're using two ways of knowing. Can you explain that for our listeners?
Sure. Yeah, I'll explain it a couple different ways. So there's that sense of what Jen Lynn said, you know, if we, you know, the problem, or that when something isn't felt like we know it isn't right, there's both the, you know, the, ugh, it doesn't feel right, and there's the, something else would feel right. And that's the body trying to show us, let us know, hey, pay attention here. Because if you pay attention here, there's not only the how it feels not right, but there's the opportunity for our organism to kind of give us little steps toward a more right way of being with the situation.
Hmm.
And I think kind of what's going on there is our brain is divided in two. There's two cerebral hemispheres. And you have the left cerebral hemisphere is designed to work very quickly and look for patterns and go out in the world and do things and create technology and all this really cool stuff. And it, you know, even the connections in the brain are much shorter, much faster. The right hemisphere has longer connections, and it processes a little more slowly. And it's really, when we talk about mindfulness, this is what mindfulness is to me, and focusing is a kind of mindfulness, is we pause and we say, hey, left hemisphere, take a break. I'm just going to kind of shift into being present and trying my best to stay present. And the right hemisphere is mapping and tracking our body from the outside and the inside all the time. And so when we tune into our body, our physical body, I can feel myself sitting on a chair and my feet are on the ground and I can check in with my breathing. Those are all things that help me orient to the present moment.
Mm.
And I do that when I meditate, and I do that when I begin focusing session. Where focusing is a little different than meditation is meditation, we're just aware of kind of what's coming up for us. And we kind of come back to the present moment by following our breath. So I may notice I'm spacing out, or I'm thinking, or I have feelings, and I'll go, oh, there I go. Gently come back to my breathing.
Mm.
In focusing, we get curious about what's there. We get curious about the situation because there's something more to know there.
Mm.
And that, so when you notice something isn't quite right, you maybe don't cognitively have what would be right, but there's perhaps a little pause that can be there and a turning toward that more right hemisphere way of experiencing, which if I give myself a moment, maybe 15 seconds or a half a minute, I can kind of sense, what is that? How does that feel? What am I noticing that doesn't feel right? And that's where kind of that raw experiencing, that somatic awareness begins to bubble up. And it comes as something that is felt, but it's not so clear. It has a certain feel to it, but it's not explicitly known. It's more implicitly known. And as we sit with it, that's where this lovely crossing over to the left hemisphere happens with symbols. And symbols are words, language, metaphor, gesture, all those kinds of ways of bringing raw, unclear experience into focusing. Thus, you know, the word focusing as a process of shifting something from the felt, unclear, holistically felt to the more explicit knowing, and then being able to do something with that knowing, take action steps, have little steps for change, have a sense of a life forward direction that we can kind of work with.
It's lovely. It's a lovely description. And I'm really appreciating the clarity with which you presented that. And
thank you.
I'm just, a lot of what you're describing is kind of like, as I was listening, it's kind of like an inner landscape. And you live in a part of the world that has a very specific landscape. I've been to that part of the world, and Washington State, Northern Washington State. And I kind of see focusing as a way of accessing our inner landscapes. Could you talk a little bit about how focusing really is part of our nature?
That's a great question. How focusing is part of our nature. Well, there's many beautiful places where I live. I live on an island and it's beautiful right here, but I love going out to the Pacific coast and the waves and the sea stacks and all the marine life and the beach. And, it's my happy place. And when I walk on that beach barefoot, I feel part of the environment. I mean, I know my body carries salt water, and there's salt water all around, and I really feel at one with it. And I think, when you first learn focusing, you, a lot of time and attention goes into, am I doing it right? That focusing feels like this thing you're learning, which is a method, and it's not integrated into the rest of your life to begin with. But once you really learn focusing and get it in your bones, so to speak, it doesn't take much to just kind of shift consciousness to that more embodied way of being, to the right hemisphere, just enjoying body sensation and realizing that our living process has so much in common with all other kinds of living process. That Jen Lynn would say we have plant body process and animal body process. And, in the winter when people are talking about struggling, I mean, one obvious thing is just to say, hey, we're animals. Mm. What are your cats and dogs doing this time of year? Well, they're curled up and sleeping. Well, I think our animal body wants to curl up and sleep a little more and be warm and cozy. And then I think those outer landscapes are ways of also understanding the inner landscape, and they provide such lovely metaphors. Mm-hmm. One of the simplest little introductions I do with folks is, just kind of help them. Maybe they don't know anything about focusing. I'm giving an introductory talk, and I'll just say, kind of close your eyes, and I guide them inside, and I say, how would you describe yourself today as a weather report?
Mm.
And it's amazing how people who know nothing about focusing will have this detailed, rich weather report. I mean, how did they come up with that?
Mm.
Because probably if I said, how are you, they would say fine. And I could say, well, say something more. Well, boy, it was kind of stressful driving here. But the weather report is a metaphor, and it has an environment, and it has a sense of weather and light and wind and perhaps rain and other things. And so I think we are creatures that come from the earth, and we carry that kind of living with us, and we can touch into that if we take the time and really pay attention to our own bodily process.
Hmm. What a lovely way to put it. I had an experience a few years ago. I was making a video for a song called Dear Shark. And the song is kind of about the evolution of the shark. And the shark has evolved over 400 million years. But the line in it that always stuck with me was that this line, my body is my brain, where the shark has evolved and is so hypersensitive, is so tuned in its environment, that its entire body is its brain. It is a sensory being that is prepared for just about anything and completely aware of its surroundings. And that has been its evolution. And I've often thought focusing is a little bit that way. As we become, we start maybe a focusing process, as I describe it, because I was a meditator coming to focusing. A lot of my experience was from the neck up. And there was a lot of emptying going on, but it was all from a thought place in me. Mm-hmm. And even though I was a very physical person from an athletic standpoint, and I was doing yoga and all kinds of other things, it wasn't until focusing brought me down into my body that I could really begin to use all of that wisdom that's available for us. So I just wanted to sort of add that into to what you offered. Because it really is an experience where our whole body can make a decision. And when we take the time to use the beautiful term, turn toward our body and that thing that is gnawing at us that we but we just take the time to be with it, we really can have transformational experiences. So I guess I'll just ask you, just to close out, how are you feeling about starting with the Seattle Focusing Institute and this point where you get to launch, and this is a new venture that's beginning? Maybe if focusing was a part of that whole process, getting to where, you know, how you use that in a business context, maybe even.
Oh, sure. Well, as I get older, I've done a lot of clinical work over the years, and I've done some teaching, and as many of us do in the focusing world, we have our private practice, and then we kind of teach on the weekends or kind of a side thing. And I realized I want to do more teaching. And not only do I want to do more teaching, I want to kind of create community. And I want to help others learn and give them a place where they can practice and teach. And I want to mentor people. I love clinical work, but if I can work with a therapist and really help them change, well, then they're gonna affect many, many other people. And in my program, which is oriented to therapists, I also worked with medical doctors, naturopathic doctors, acupuncturists, Alexander technique folks, Feldenkrais, yoga teachers, massage therapists. And, you know, they're going to learn something and bring it into their practice and affect many other people. And so in part, it's also the development of a bit more mentoring. After I became a coordinator in the focusing world, I realized that I still needed some mentoring. And I found a lovely focuser that everyone knows in the focusing world, Joan Klagsburn. And I had such an amazingly wonderful experience with her. I think she's just perhaps, along with my wife, they're two of the most encouraging people I've ever met in the world. And I really needed that. I really needed someone to encourage me and say, you know, that's great. Do that and do that, you know, do more of that and you can do that. And it wasn't just praise, but it was really in a deep listening way, helping me sort of grow that sound foundation under my feet to do what I wanted. And I want to help other people do that. Because it's one thing to learn focusing, it's another to get out there and teach it. And not everyone wants to do all the marketing and building this and doing that to create training programs. It's great if you do, but I want to be able to give people a place to practice and to really teach practices for change, because I teach meditation. Mm-hmm. Focusing and becoming certified in trauma releasing exercises. There's lots of practices that I think help facilitate change, and I'd like to be able to offer those to the Seattle Focusing Institute.
Wonderful. I would really like to take the time to thank you for being part of our podcast and for giving this gift to people who can come back to it time and again and listen to this very rich conversation. And once again, it's the Seattle Focusing Institute. Our guest today has been Jeffrey Morrison. Jeffrey, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you, David, for this opportunity.
Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Google Play Music, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. And visit our website at thefocusingway.com.